Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
And welcome to Serious Issues, a weekly comic book podcast brought to you by King's Comics in Sydney. My name is Siobhan.
AKA Snot Girl.
AKA Snot Girl, that's me. And my co-host name is Levins.
AKA Snot Boy.
And every week we read a giant list of comic books and let you know which are the ones that you should be reading.
And you can find all the comics that we talk about on this snotty podcast today at the snottiest comic book store in Sydney, King's Comics, which is 310 Pitt Street.
I don't
in Sydney,
think we are the snottiest comic book store.
Snottykingscomics.com. This week in comics, Hellblazer began, Snot Girl began,
yep.
Velvet ended, Joyride ended, and I don't know, we got the middle of All New Wolverine.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah, we also read... I think we hit 40 comics again this week.
It was a big week.
And we're already recording, so no time to count them. Let's take our word from it.
That's heaps.
We read 40 comics this week. We're going to dive straight into things and review all the new number ones that came out this week. Sorry this episode's a little bit late. I was up in country New South Wales with my grandparents, and unless you wanted an hour about, like, I don't know, what was it, Ginger Megs?
Oh, yeah.
We could do a Ginger Megs special.
I could talk about Ginger Megs for an hour.
But yeah, we're recording a little bit late, but we've got this week's comics and last week's comics in front of us, so hopefully we won't get confused.
Mm.
First things first is the regular segment in which we review all of the new number ones that came out this week. And we'll start off with three new DC comics, two Rebirth issues and one regular number one. First things first, Hellblazer. Hellblazer.
Let's jump in.
By Simon Oliver and art by Moritat.
That's a good name.
Yeah, great game. Is his first name Mori and his last name Tat?
I hope so.
That name is much better than this comic. And I am a huge Hellblazer and John Constantine fan. On my Bucks party, before I got married, it was like a three-day affair, quite a bender. We all went away on a property up north. And on the last day, I checked my phone and Comixology were doing a sale on the Hellblazer series. Every single issue of that 300 issue series was $1.
Wow.
And in my hungover stupor, I was like, that's a great deal. And so I spent $300 on Hellblazer comics on the last day of my Bucks party.
You know how to live.
Yeah, exactly. I've read all 300 of them, and that was originally published through Vertigo. I would say that is probably one of them. It should be the most celebrated title at Vertigo because it was, you know, so long running, and it had so many different creators that you really associate with the Vertigo imprint, like everyone from Grant Morrison, obviously Neil Gaiman, and then through it, like more recent Vertigo creators like Jason Aaron.
Mm.
Peter Milligan, they all had their crack. Like so many different incredible, Mike Carey, and artists too. Even Brian Azzarello wrote a really strange run on Hellblazer for a while. But I just think he's a character that you can interpret in so many different ways, and everyone tries to add their bit. But ever since they took him out of the Vertigo universe, DC has kind of struggled to make him be as memorable and as not good of a character as he was when he was in the No Holds Barred Vertigo universe.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's definitely an issue with a character whose deal is he swears a lot and he drinks and he's not very morally upstanding when you can't swear in a comic.
I know this seems so so lame, but it's so important that Constantine swears.
It really is.
And even though he doesn't swear that much, he says shit in his first 40 issues, but they change it as soon as Garth Ennis comes along. He starts saying fuck. But I don't know. It's just so important to the character that he has a filthy mouth and just kind of, especially, you know, calling, because there is small ties to the DC universe in the Vertigo series. And he says all manner of horrible things to everyone from like a, you know, Swamp Thing to who's the equivalent of the Watcher in the DC universe? The Phantom Stranger.
Oh, yeah.
don't write in if he's not actually the equivalent of the Watcher. I don't care. He lives in space and he's weird. Yeah. Fantasy. He probably doesn't live in space anymore. I'm very sorry.
He's got a hat. Yeah. Watcher's got a big head. What more do you want?
So Hellblazer Rebirth. This is written again by Simon Oliver and art by Morris Hat. This is an attempt to kind of make him, you know, start from the ground up again. All of the New 52 stories, I think, were set in America. He was all in America doing all kinds of adventures. And the big news with this issue is that he's going back to his hometown of London. This issue deals with that a demon put a curse on Constantine the last time he left London, and this rebirth issue is about him returning there, reuniting with old friends as he starts suffering at the hands of the curse and then trying to undo the curse on the demon. That kind of sounds like, you know, pretty good Hellblazer fare. But
it's just not.
Well, I mean, I've read stories where he does similar things that were infinitely better than this. And I feel like, you know, it's a risky ground when you try and retread material that is so beloved from a character and
Absolutely.
Then don't do something new or exciting or even like faithful to what originally happened. This story just kind of a mess, and it made me just not. I was excited to start reading Hellblazer again because I think Constantine is such a great character, not just because he swears, but okay, just because he swears.
But magic stuff is great, and magic stuff works really well in the DC universe, and he's a character that could work within the mainstream DC universe.
And well, magic is the best when you know it really, really illustrates that there is a price to pay when you Absolutely. Dabble in the black arts, and no comic has done that better than Hellblazer. Like, you know, he kind of rarely succeeds. And if he does, it's at such huge cost to everyone that's close to him. And that kind of is so... That's more important to Hellblazer than the swearing. yeah. And I just found this, like, weirdly... I don't know.
I think part of the problem is that the voice is not there. Mm. Like, it's not a compelling or interesting or believable Constantine voice. But even, like, the England of... that they're choosing to represent, the version of London. I mean, it's a guy walking around with a bowler hat and a man, you know, doffing his cap to him and saying morning gov at the end. Like, I mean, for Christ's sakes, it's...
Yeah.
If you're setting it now, set it now, not in some fictional London from 50 years ago.
I highly recommend the early run of Hellblazer because I know it's such a farce to say, like, you know, oh, you know, the best character in this book or story is the city that it's in, but it was so important to have such a massive mainstream comic, or, you know, Vertigo mainstream, be set in London, and it was so what's his name, Jamie something, he was the original writer on the Hellblazer, the first 40 issues or so, and it just kind of, it was a very, very British comic right up until Azzarello took it over for a few issues, and that went back to Warren Ellis. Like I said, fucking everybody that you associate with Vertigo had a crack at
and big British Hellblazer writers.
Yeah, huge British writers. But yeah, this I think the problem is, like, this is a Hellblazer comic with not just Swamp Thing in it. Like, I get that they have ties, so it makes sense for him to be around. But fucking Wonder Woman's in this, and who else? Shazam. Why is Shazam in a Hellblazer comic?
Yeah,
I don't see the need for. Like, yeah, he can exist in the same universe, but... Or maybe if you really want to have Constantine in the DC universe, give him a Vertigo series too that has completely separate from it. Like, he's a strong enough character to have two different, completely different stories going at the same time. I just want a filthy, really dark Hellblazer comic back in my life. And that's really experimental and, you know, with different creators jumping on every 40 issues or so. This is just a bummer to read.
Yeah. And, like, I haven't read much Hellblazer, if any, I don't think.
Sure.
And I have to say, like, this did not make me want to read more. Mm. It, like, it, I probably now want to go and read the original stuff, and definitely I'd love to see, you know, someone like Grant Morrison do something really cool and exciting with that character and with that concept, and I think you can find a lot of value in that. But
He only did like I think two issues in the entire 300 runs, uh-huh. 300 issues.
I'm going to read those.
Garth Ennis has done his first arc in Hellblazer is Constantine outsmarting a demon out of not only like a curse, but also like Constantine has cancer.
Oh, yeah.
It's incredible. It's such a great testament to the kind of manipulative, cunning character traits of Constantine. He's a great character. I want him to be great again. Hashtag make Hellblazer great again. And unfortunately, Simon Oliver did not do it. But that said, it's a rebirth issue. It kind of doesn't mean shit.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it one more chance with the issue number one, but this was not a good start. We got another rebirth issue this week was Batgirl Birds of Prey, which is a title that is probably more fond in Siobhan's world than in mine.
Love a good bird. Love a good prey.
Do you pray to birds?
Yes.
I got very excited when I saw Yannick Paquette again show up doing the cover art on this one, but unfortunately, interiors are not by him, but that's no slouch on...
By Claire Rowe.
Claire Rowe.
Does some nice work, I think.
I really enjoyed this art. It was very reminiscent of the Batgirl stuff that we saw last year. What was her name?
Babstar.
Babstar. But
very
her own slant on it.
Good movement and good action, I think, in these as well.
All right, so you liked this. Please tell me what you liked about it so we can have a little break before I complain about it.
I did like it. I think that, so this is written by Julie Benson and Shauna Benson, who I assume are sisters, and who I think are TV writers, if I'm not wrong.
Yes, they write The 100.
Okay, cool. This is mostly like a recap issue. So if you know Babs's origin story, if you know the sort of new version of Helena Bertinelli, if you know... Black Canary, it's not teaching you anything new, but the thing that I really liked in this was that they gave each character has a really distinct voice, you know, and I that was probably the thing that I found most appealing.
Sure, definitely.
I think that it shows that they have a really good grasp on who the characters are, and I'm excited to see what they then do with them. So I think I thought this was a solid rebirth issue in that I already knew all this stuff, but I was still compelled and I still read it all and I thought it was cool.
Sure. I'm really weary of first person narration in these rebirth issues.
Everything is
like, my name is this person and this is why I do this. And here is everything that's happened in my life until now, but now that's going to change. Yeah. And here's why.
That's fair.
I just find that like a crutch and it's very, very heavy in this. And also, stop showing us the Killing Joke.
I know. But they've just like... They've just decided that is canon.
Yeah.
That is part of the whole deal. We just all have to deal with it.
Yeah, the thing is that this book could be absolute trash and it wouldn't even be the worst thing that happened to Batgirl in the last week.
I know, right. But how cool is Huntress in this? I really like this version of Huntress. I haven't read that much
I like this version of everyone in here. I think the tropes of a rebirth issue were very stark in this.
Yeah.
And the recappiness and the first person narration really, really irked me. But yeah, look, I'm with you. I love seeing Huntress together. You know, I love seeing two purple costumes in the same room.
Yep.
And it looks like that's exactly what we're going to get. And I like this iteration of Black Canary a lot more than the one that we see in Green Arrow.
Yeah, totally. She's so cool. I think that I just have a bit of like, I think Huntress is really cool. And I think
she
Black
is
Canary
really cool.
Is really cool.
Who do you think that is at the very end saying that's taken over the Oracle?
I don't know. I mean, there's some clues because it looks like she's a nerd because she's eating Pocky.
Right.
And there's a little statue, like a little cute guy. So I feel like it can't be, I don't know, I feel like it can't be a bad guy, to be honest.
Right. Okay, sure.
I reckon that's going to end up being like a good guy Oracle.
Okay, cool. Highly recommend, it's kind of spoiled now, but if you ever get a chance to go back and read John Ostrander's Suicide Squad run, very timely given that the movie comes out next week.
Mm-hmm.
The original run in which he introduces the concept of Suicide Squad and all the characters that we've come to love and come to be scared of as they get introduced in the movies for the first time next week. But John Ostrander was also, and his wife was also, they were responsible for Barbara Gordon becoming Oracle.
Yeah,
and
which a lot of people think happens like in The Killing Joke. And I think a lot of people will think, does happen in The Killing Joke because of the animated movie that is coming out soon.
But it's really cool because all of a sudden, like, you know, 20-something issues in, they start getting contacted by an oracle who starts giving them tips and you don't know who it is for like quite a while, and then it's finally revealed that it's Barbara Gordon. Mm. I just think that was such an awesome thing to do with that character, because she was literally like sitting in the background of shots with Commissioner Gordon until that point.
Yeah, and I think like I am still very firmly in the camp that I wish she kind of still was Oracle. I think that there's other people who could do Batgirl, but Babs is the only Oracle.
Yeah, we've seen several Batgirls.
Yeah, like just bring Cassandra Cain into Birds of Prey and have Babs be Oracle again, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, and she can do it like while walking. Like,
yeah. It's like, she could still do that, and she's still cooler like that. Also, if you like the concept of Birds of Prey, I very highly recommend checking out Gail Simone's run, especially the stuff that she did with Nicola Scott. So good. Some of my favorite.
Yeah, real good run. Even Chuck Dixon's original run on Birds of Prey is really fun.
Chuck Dixon was the best. Sorry, there's random beeps.
Random beeps. The computer agreed with us. Loves Chuck Dixon. I'm going to be sticking with this, at least for the first arc, because I love the characters and I want to give these two new creators or comic book creators a chance.
Mm, absolutely.
They paid off well with Captain Marvel, and unfortunately the two writers from the Peggy Carter series aren't staying on, but hopefully they'll pop up somewhere else. Hopefully DC get them. That'd be good.
Yeah, that would be good.
TV writers often do make good comics.
Agreed.
One last DC number one came out this week, and that was a Justice League number one, written by Brian Hitch and drawn by Tony Daniel. Two older creators that you could say were a bit past their heyday.
I think this is probably the thing I've liked that Tony Daniel's drawn the most. Mostly because I think he draws a nice Wonder Woman.
Right. I really loved that C-3PO one shot he drew.
Oh, yeah, that was good.
It was really, really like loopy, whereas this feels a lot bit more photo-referencey.
Yeah.
The art, I mean, you can't really complain about the art except the fact that he draws maybe a bit too much butt on Wonder Woman.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean. You're going to get that sometimes, aren't you? I mean, it's not really a complaint, but it is a point. Yeah. Blah.
Yeah.
Story-wise, this was just did nothing for me.
I know. I mean, like,
it was
just
so
the most
weak on everything.
Like, by the numbers, team-up book of all time. And does every, like, does the first threat that they face have to be, like, some ludicrous, the whole world is collapsing thing? Because it's just,
yeah.
Like, where do you go from there? How do you keep building?
And
like,
how are other stories going on in the DC universe while this is happening?
Absolutely, absolutely. You really write yourself into a corner. Like, how is all the shit with the Red Lanterns happening at the same time as this? Like, it's just very silly.
I was stoked to see that, like, you know, the first person we see in this is you know, Wonder Woman kind of jump in the frame and, you know, smash a bunch of tanks around. I thought that was cool. And I was like, oh, what's going to go on here? But then it just kind of...
Yeah, and I don't like the voice of Diana is just like... I feel like... She can be written really dry and like, I am an Amazon.
Lifeless,
I am here to teach you about
robotic.
War. And you're just like, oh,
she's not Red Tornado, guys.
Yeah. Bring Red Tornado in. I love Red Tornado.
But the worst thing in this book is I'm going to complain about them later in the episode too, the inclusion of the Green Lanterns, Jessica Cruz and Simon Baz. Every time that they are introduced, they just give so much backstory about why they're here.
I know
how much they have to prove. It's like reading a
it's just constant exposition.
It's like the thought bubbles of exposition that you get in like Chris Claremont's X-Men run. I can't stand those comics, even though they're so beloved. Like I that entire Jean Grey run, she just every single like panel, it's like she tells her entire life story and everything that needs to change from this point forward, and the decisions that weigh in. And every time we see the Green Lanterns appear in a comic book, including their own one, they just like let you know everything that's happened to them up until this point, and blah 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 blah. They've become really, really boring and awful characters to me, and I've only read like four comics starring them.
Yeah, I agree. I think I mean, my favorite Justice League comics of all time are probably Grant Morrison's run on JLA. And
I love Geoff Johns' like Justice League stuff that he did before New 52.
Oh, yeah, the pre-52 stuff was good.
He balanced, like, all his characters really well. But, I mean, you compare this to when New 52 started. The Justice League title was actually pretty fun for the first five issues. And this does not do anything of that caliber.
And you just, like, I just wish the threat was something more interesting. You know, like, the DC universe is so huge and weird, and there's so much that you could do with that, and just to be like, oh, it's some zombies attacking the world again.
Yeah.
Boring.
And give us something that might be actually a good thing. I love it when like they all band together to fight something, and then it turns out to be like a misunderstood thing, and then he's part of the team.
That's
a great first arc to it, to
a
Justice League story.
The one moment I liked in this, and it's like one panel, is you know, because Wonder Woman is fighting on her own for some reason. And there's a just one panel where a bunch of zombies come and they're like, you know, less than a foot away from her face and she's just staring them down. And that I thought was cool. And that was my favorite bit in the whole comic.
I thought it was really crazy in this issue of Justice League starring Wonder Woman when Wonder Woman got really hungry and turned into a...
turned into Doomsday and then ate a Snickers and then she was back.
Why did that happen every week, every issue of DC? Yeah.
It's really weird. They
need to get new writers. What else should we talk about? Let's move on to a comic we're very excited about, so much so that I said snot a bunch of times in the intro to this episode. Snot Girl number one by Brian Lee O'Malley of Scott Pilgrim versus the World and Seconds Fame, and Leslie Hung on art. I fucking loved this.
I fucking loved it. Oh my goodness.
And this is definitely a comic that is not for everyone. Like if you've been irritated by a Brian Lee O'Malley character before, you will be extremely irritated by these comics.
Yeah.
But I've kind of come to enjoy the fact that, you know, even throughout an entire run of a story that he does, you might find a main or secondary character completely unlikable.
Absolutely. I think that, like, Scott from Scott Pilgrim was, like, largely unlikable throughout the entire series. And I think that, I forget who the main character in Seconds is, but that...
Secondy.
Yeah,
whatever
her name is. Like, she also, her whole character arc is going from being, like, selfish and unlikable and then...
Yeah.
Not doing that anymore.
Totally. And he loves, you know, you give the character a little bit of a redeeming moment and then you just plummet them down even lower than they've ever been before. He's great at that. And like, but still making them weirdly human and relatable and...
Yeah, and just watchable.
Yeah. And look, I'm certainly not an Instagram fashion blogger. I might sound like
what?
I am, but I don't know.
You look like you are.
Look the part. But that is exactly who, is it Lottie?
Yep.
The main character, she is a like an Instagram fashion blogger, mm-hmm. She has a group of colleagues who are in the same ilk as her that she can't stand and gives awful nicknames to, and as well, you know, it's a lot about, you know, what you let people see versus what you really are. So she suffers. The main part of this is that she suffers from allergies, but she also suffers from huge image problems, mm-hmm. and self-esteem problems and the inability to, you know, to be in social situations as well. Mm-hmm. But you wouldn't know that to, you know, see the many selfies that she puts up every day on her Instagram in different outfits and weird locations, that kind of thing. We see her introduced to someone that she sees as unbelievably cool. She nicknames her Cool Girl. And the end of this issue sees the Cool Girl nickname her Snot Girl after she bursts in on Lottie on the toilet, taking her dropping her allergy pills all over the ground and covered in snot. And then something terrible happens.
Something terrible happens. I mean, just such a fun first issue. The art's so nice. I'm so excited that he worked with Leslie Hung on this because I think her work's amazing and
I'm
the colors
not familiar
are beautiful.
Has she? Don't worry about having to look it up if you don't know off the top of your head. But what's she done in the past?
Well, I actually think that she's a bit of a newbie because I've been following her on Instagram for a while because her art's really, really pretty. But I don't think she's actually had anything published before.
Right. Cool.
And I think they're just friends. And he
great. It's amazing. You also get one page of a original Brian Lee O'Malley drawn strip at the end about his own allergies, which is very amusing. And I think that this is just a very different book that Image is putting out.
Yeah.
This is almost like, you know, a Boom or Oni Press who put out Scott Pilgrim.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it reminds me, more than anything, it really does remind me of a manga. You know, like, it really makes me think of things like Paradise Kiss, which are all about fashion. And I feel like there's, like, even the way that she talks and expresses herself and the fact that she gives everyone cute nicknames, it feels very sort of...
Sometimes cute. Manga-y. Sometimes very mean.
Sometimes mean. And, I mean, they've described it as Sex and the City meets American Psycho, which I think is a really fun and apt description. But, yeah, I loved it. I love this so much. I really recommend everyone read it if it sounds like your sort of thing. Because I accept it won't be everyone's thing.
Yeah, but I think give it a chance. You might be surprised.
Yeah.
I think this is definitely going to be like one of our more beloved books at the end of the year.
Absolutely.
And very excited to read a Brian Lee O'Malley monthly.
Yeah.
I've never had that in my life before.
I'm excited to see if he can keep it up.
Image put out another book this week called The Hunt, written by a creative team that I am not familiar with, Colin Lorimer, and he wrote and drew it, and colors by Joanna Lafuente. This was a set in Ireland, and is about a girl who can see like angels of death, specters, that kind of thing.
Something like that.
Her dad goes missing or something, and I don't know. It's
how much like does her grandma look like Judi Dench though?
Yes, she can see visions of people before they die. Is that she can see all kinds of different weird visions? And she's a poor teenager, not fitting in at school.
Everyone thinks she's crazy because she is.
Yeah, this is a pretty angsty book and not something that I enjoyed reading too much.
I quite enjoyed the first issue. I think that I got a bit overexcited, to be honest, because I realized when I was about 8 comics in that I'd only read female-led titles.
Oh, cool.
And I was like, holy shit, I don't know if that's ever happened to me before. And I liked that they were all things on the top of my pile or things that I was super excited about. And so I quite liked this. I mean, it wasn't anything super special, but I'm intrigued enough to see where it goes. I liked the art. I think it's quite interesting. It's a voice we don't hear super often. Yeah.
I thought it was a bit overly dark and to the point of like that I was a bit bored by it.
Mm, yeah. I mean, it didn't blow my mind or anything, but I'll give it another couple of issues.
I do like reading the word feck.
Yeah. My mum used to think that was My mum always let us say feck when we were growing up because she was like, no, you're Irish. Like, it's your heritage. It's
amazing.
Fine.
So good.
Yeah, classic mum.
Over at Boom, we got a new comic by Justin Jordan, who I've previously ranted about how much I like him on Luther Strode.
Mm-hmm.
He's done various other little things here and there at Marvel and DC and Image since. This is a four-parter that he's drawing with a Mexican artist called Raul Trevino. Mm-hmm. It's called Sombra. And it is about about the Mexican ganglands and an agent trying to infiltrate a gang and find her father, who's gone undercover, but in doing so has become more feared than gang members themselves.
Mm. I liked this.
Yeah, good. I did too.
I really enjoyed it.
Justin Jordan is always walked that line of doing things that maybe are a bit too grim for my usual tastes, but there's always so much character in his dialogue and characters that keep me kind of mired to it.
Yeah,
He did a six issue miniseries that the name escapes me last year that was so over the top, grim and bloody, and you know, everyone met a grisly end. But it was still really enjoyable from start to finish.
Yeah, and I'm not much of an ultra-violence person, and there were moments in this where I was like, woo,
yeah,
I
mean, the Mexican gang and drug war kind of stuff.
And the bit where the kid starts eating his own fingers was pretty gross.
Yeah.
But the art is so nice. Like, it reminds me of...
Manga again for me.
Well, I was going to say, it reminds me of something like Black Sad because it almost looks like it's like a beautiful Disney cartoon.
Mm. But this has been one of the strong, like I when we started this, I was like, wow, Boom could do no wrong this year. And they've done so many series that I haven't really enjoyed since I said that. But this is really, really great stuff. Justin Jordan's a great writer and paired with a great artist. You're trying to look up the thing he did. It was called Dead Body Road.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't read that. That was a bit grim.
It was very fun, but it was pretty grim.
Yeah.
Dark Horse put out a number one by one of our sometime favorite creators, Jeff Lemire, this week, with art by Dean Ormston and colors by Dave Stewart. And it was a joy to read.
I loved this. Black Hammer, did you say
Black Hammer?
Name?
I did. Sorry. No, Black Hammer. It's a joy to read. initially, it seems like it's the perfect comic for Lemire to actually draw himself. Because I mean, that was how we were introduced to him on his own independent titles, and then over at Vertigo with Sweet Tooth, he drew and wrote all of his own comics. He does less of that now, but that's because he writes like 10 comics a month.
Yeah.
I felt like Dean Ormston's art was actually really, really well matched to his style.
It's very... there's sort of elements that are very reminiscent of Jeff Lemire's art, I think.
Yeah.
But with a bit more sort of Dark Horse, traditional structure.
Like, it was almost like Mike Mignola, I was going
to say.
Yeah,
absolutely. I think Dave Stewart brings those colors to it.
Yeah. So this is about... Do you want to say what this one's about?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is sort of about some, I would say, Golden Age era style superheroes who are stuck in an alternate universe. In the forms that they entered that universe, that's how they're stuck. And they've been there for 10 years, just living on a farm, trying to live their lives out. Mm. And it's so fun. It's so fun playing around with those sort of Golden Age tropes. There's like the alien of the team. There's... a little girl who's actually a grown woman who is now stuck in the body of a small girl,
like,
and
a nine-year-old
is incredibly frustrated and stealing cigarettes and just trying to get a fucking drink, and no one will serve her.
There's a wacky cosmic scientist and
a robot,
a dark, you know, a dark arts kind of figure. This was so much fun, and you then have back on the world that they were originally from, someone trying to find what happened to them.
Mm.
I loved every page of this, and I hope look, we're a bit burned by Platona because we loved issue one of that, and it ended up being a bit of a fizzle. But I really, really hope that this is going to be like Lemire's
glory
run. This title, at the very least, it's an excellent number one, and you do get a bit of Lemire art at the end. He gives you a little bit of a, is that him? It looks like Lemire art, but maybe it's not.
Maybe it's not. But I love the origin, the sort of Jack Kirby esque touches and things like that.
Yeah, I don't think that is Lemire. I think that is Ormston. I'm wrong. Yeah, this is an awesome book.
Absolutely.
There were lots of really good number ones this week. And,
absolutely. And I did actually get a look at a preview copy of issue two, and it's very, very good.
Mm.
It's extremely good. I highly recommend
it. How do I get that? Hook me up.
Be a Valkyrie.
Oh, yeah, the cool. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
You should tell everyone what that is. I think it's really awesome.
Yeah, so the Valkyries is a group, if you haven't heard of them, of women who work in comic book stores, because we're a force, people. Started by Kate Leth. And, it's really cool because I think that it's time that sort of distributors and comic artists and writers, they realize that women are a significant buying force in the industry, and if women in comic book stores can push things for you, we absolutely will. And I got to look at a couple of issues of that. I've read an advanced copy of Margaret Atwood's new graphic novel, which is really, really good and a lot of fun. I'm really excited for that to come out. And,
that's awesome.
Yeah, issue 2 of Black Hammer is one that I got to have a look at. It was great.
Go Valkyries.
Yeah, woo!
Over at Marvel, I read a new number one called Deadpool and the Mercs for Money. And spoiler alert, I will not be reading issue 2.
I mean, it's what it says on the tin.
I wasn't expecting much from it. Written by Cullen Bunn, who I've previously said is just very, very competent at doing exactly what you think an issue is going to do.
Yep.
Art by...
someone, Coelho?
Coelho.
Who I like.
Yeah.
Nice, cartoony.
Art's fantastic. Mm. Almost reminiscent of Ed McGuinness.
Yep.
Who's doing stuff over at the Deadpool and Spider-Man series. What's his name? Is it written over at the back? I hate it when they don't put it on the first page.
Yeah.
Iban Coelho. Coyeo, nailed it. This is about Deadpool and his mercs team, a bunch of weird, odd job mercenary guys, three of whom are getting solo titles really soon.
Bizarre.
So this book probably sold more than all of the other books that we've talked about so far combined. I got excited because this is about the mercenary team. They've got to track down and kidnap Negasonic Teenage Warhead.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, great. They haven't really done much with her since the Deadpool movie came out. But they kind of wrap up her arc by the end of the issue, seemingly.
Well, it seems like she'll probably come back. But and that bit, will be an
know,
impact.
Just, I don't know. I thought that they had an opportunity to give her more depth, but instead they just kind of... Has she always been able to flick it forward into the future and see what's about to happen?
I don't know. I know nothing about that character, but her power set seems nebulous and cool.
But then, yeah, it looks like their next target next month is Radioactive Man. So, this series, it's either going to be a really goofy kind of, now we capture this bad guy, now we capture this bad guy. But hopefully there's more of a kind of proper plot.
Yeah, and I think if you like Deadpool, this is tons of Deadpool.
Nobody likes Deadpool.
No one likes
his comics. Deadpool. Don't sell any. I was happy to see Domino show up.
Yeah, that was cool.
I do like Domino.
I like Domino.
Cool. Deadpool and the Mercs for Money. If you like Deadpool, you'd probably love that.
Yep.
I read a Garth Ennis comic this week. Did you read this? Red
I did.
Team. I think this is a sequel to another Red Team comic book.
Oh, okay.
So there was
a lot of
assumed knowledge, and I assume like a love for these characters already, because I did not gain any. And he gives them so much boring dialogue.
Yeah, agreed.
I feel like if I was a big fan of these characters, I'd be fine with it. But instead, I was like, oh, hurry up.
Yeah, as an issue one, it wasn't... but I mean, it was compelling enough. Like, I like that it's kind of just a straight crime detective book. That's fun. And I'll probably actually go and try and track down the first story, because I did quite enjoy this.
And there's very little Garth Ennis signature grossness in this book. So if you want to read a Garth Ennis book that isn't disgusting, go right ahead and read this one.
Yeah, go for it.
Cool. Next, Grant Morrison wrote a comic this week.
Yay!
We haven't even talked about the most eventful number one for you. We'll leave that to the end.
I figured we were leading up to it.
this one is out through Graphic India, which I think is an Indian publisher.
Yeah, I believe so. And I like, if you look at the names of everyone working on this, the art is by Jeevan J. Kang, who is excellent. I really, really like the art. They all seem like Indian names. I think it's an Indian company, and it seems like a very sort of Indian-inspired story.
So, yeah, Grant Morrison writes 18 days for this imprint already. I've not read any of that. But I did not really connect with this comic much, and I wondered if that was because it's called Avatar X. Or Avatar X.
Destroyer of Darkness.
Yeah. I didn't connect with it, and I wasn't sure if this is maybe like calling on classic Indian literature or stories or mythology that I'm not familiar with, and therefore I didn't really get anything out of this. But I mean, basically it's about a god who rises to like, you know, be a destroyer, and is kind of questioned by a higher force who connects him to a human,
so that he learns how to be humble.
As a tether, he like tethers him to a human, I guess, and then is taken on by a bigger force that tries to destroy him from the Hydra void.
I really liked this.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
I appreciate it. It's one of Graham Morrison's sort of, I mean, the way it starts, I can appreciate that this is one of his less readable comics, and it's not the most compelling thing he's ever done. Really like, I am the destroyer of worlds, I can be as small as a grain of sand and then as big as the universe, and all that stuff's a little bit like, oh, right, Grant Morrison.
I'm going to give this series another issue just to see if they add a bit more meat to it.
Yeah.
This is just a very long introduction to one character, which is not something that Grant Morrison really does very often. Normally in, you know, the comparative, like, you know, his big epic comics are a lot more wordy in that regard, so they take a lot longer to read, whereas I kind of flew through this.
Yeah.
And then was like, oh, was that it by the end? He has written some really great comics starring Indian characters. Do you read Vinorama through Vertigo? I highly recommend Vinorama. Might be pronouncing it incorrectly, but that's really, really fun.
I'll have to check it
out. About a teenage Indian boy living in London, I think. Really fun. Finally, before we end on the most eventful number one of the week, which is Betty and Veronica number one. Did you read this? Sergio Aragonés Gru.
I love Sergio.
So I love Sergio Aragonés, obviously, because I grew up reading Mad Magazine. Yeah. He wrote and drew majority of the Spy versus Spy stuff and countless lighter sides of.
And all of the, what do they call it? All of the margins?
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
I think they call
and
that.
He also has drawn a couple of Simpsons comics, and his name pops up a lot. Gru is an ongoing series that he writes for Dark Horse, which I guess you would say is his Usagi Yojimbo.
Yep.
Written and drawn by him, Gru is a warrior that is not feared by everyone because he is ruthless. He is ruthless, though, but he's feared because he is an idiot who destroys everything he touches. So it's a very goofy warrior comic. I loved this.
Yeah, it's so fun. And he's one of the all-time greatest cartoonists. Every panel is so chock full of like little details and little side gags and little everything. Like, that's his signature. And it really is funny.
It's so well drawn too. It's just
so well drawn.
Beautiful cartooning, really lovely cut colored. Oh, there's a one pager about his dog as a back cover too.
Who's probably the best character, Ruffato?
This made me go, oh wow, this is. Cause have you got like those big, huge titles like celebrated comics that you're like, one day I'll read them?
I have so many of those. Cerebus? Like Hellblazer. Yeah, yeah.
Cerebus or Cerebus? I don't know.
Cerebus.
It's probably Cerebus. It's probably definitely Cerebus. Trust Siobhan over me. I don't even pronounce. I do a podcast with Siobhan and I pronounce her name wrong every single week.
Probably same.
But yeah, I didn't realize Gru was such a, almost like a Saga Yojimbo. You can pick up any arc of that, and all you have to know is that he's a fucking rabbit samurai, and that's all you need to know. Just go through it, and it's a joy to read. This is, I guess, similar in that respect. It is a really, really funny cartoon comic, but it also has a really nice little heart message behind it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, highly recommended.
Really fun.
Cool. Betty and Veronica, number one, the last issue that we'll talk about in First Things First this week.
Written and illustrated by Adam Hughes, which is huge because I can't even remember the last thing that Adam Hughes did interiors on.
Right, really?
It's been a while, surely.
Mostly just does those pin-up style covers.
Yep.
Loves drawing a superhero in a bikini.
Loves it. Loves a bikini.
And
which is very clear in this issue.
Yeah. This is a confusing comic in that it doesn't feel like thematically similar to either Chip Zdarsky's Jughead or Mark Waid's Archie.
Agreed. Which do feel very similar in tone.
Definitely. While having a very unique voice.
Yeah.
This one doesn't feel like a unique voice.
No.
It doesn't feel like it brings much new to the thing. It definitely feels like Adam Hughes is behind it.
It definitely feels like Adam Hughes is a massive Betty and Veronica fan. That comes like that is the main thing that comes across for me. I feel like this is the one that felt the most like a classic Archie comic to me, in some of the sort of like the fact that it's narrated by Hot Dog is a fairly classic Archie trope, I guess.
I love that he's in a tweed coat with a pipe in the front page. The art in this is great.
But there's something very, I mean, the panels are very, very crowded, and part of that is because it's an extremely wordy comic.
Yeah, that's the biggest problem I had with this.
Yeah, like it took a long time.
It took to read that Grant Morrison comic to read the first four pages of this.
And there is something quite odd to me. Because, like, there's a lot of slapstick in this, which is very classic Archie thing, and great and fine and excellent. But it seems quite, like, because his style's so photorealistic, it looked quite odd to me at times.
It's coloured very weirdly. I would have loved to see this black and white, to be honest. So that would have been really cool.
The colours are very washed out for some reason.
The biggest problem I have with this is it's very old guy writing young guy dialogue.
Yeah.
And we complain about that every week on this show, and I thought that the editors of all the Archie comics at the moment just knock it out of the park when you know, making sure that the writers maintain a really youthful energy and, you know, relevant slang while not being too, like, you know, like, this will be a mess to read 2 years from now.
Yeah.
There's some really strange choices.
Yeah, there was some terrible dialogue, but there were also some jokes and gags that I thought were really funny and I thought worked really well.
He says, Santa has little minions with mad crafting skills.
Yeah, that was the first moment where I went, oh, no.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I should just close this comic and just look at the cover. The story is one that you've read 100 times. Pops is closing, and it looks like Veronica might be behind it. On Veronica's family, obviously. A hunch.
Like, there are moments where I feel like he really understands, like, the Betty and Veronica dichotomy, and he really understands each of those characters really well and can bring something to it. But it's just not quite there. And, like, I wish he'd just gone and done a straight-up pin-up. Like, I would love a Adam Hughes, Betty and Veronica pin-up. And that was always one of my favorite things about Archie comics when I was little, was having like a cool little pinup, and they had cool outfits, and even if they were in bikinis, they had cool bikinis, and like, you know, I was really
into it.
It
wasn't necessarily sexualized. It was just two girls at a beach.
Although it was occasionally sexualized, but it was fun. It was cute and fun rather than skeezy, if that makes sense. Even the pinup in this is sort of apologized for, or like snuck in there.
That said, I enjoyed that joke. I actually thought that was one of the few jokes in this that really landed for me.
Although Gareth did say, because there's in case you haven't read the issue, there's two pages where they sort of go, oh, I ate the homework, so they're not here. But Gareth said, is that just because Adam Hughes is so slow and he didn't get around to those two pages?
I think he's almost joking on the fact that he's known for that too. I thought those two pages were quite successful. There are a few jokes in there, but and it also meant that it wasn't, you know, it was just reading a bunch of word balloons instead of trying to cram them into different panels. And I thought it was more successful as a storytelling device than the actual comic. Also, didn't Pops like close in like the first issue of Jughead? Did it happen that recently or no? I feel like hasn't Wade or Zdarsky already done the Pops closing?
Probably,
maybe not. I could be wrong. Yeah, look, I didn't hate this, but it feels like a step back for Archie overall.
And I think the main problem is I don't know who this book is for. Like, this book is for Adam Hughes fans, I guess. You said that.
Yeah.
But it's definitely not an all ages title. It's not like for adults. I guess it's supposed to be for teens, but I can't imagine teens being into this. You know, like, it's just, it's very weird.
Yeah. And I mean, you're a massive Betty and Veronica fan, and
yeah,
kind of not for you either. So.
Yeah. Like, it's weird to read a Betty and Veronica comic that doesn't appear to be from their perspective or even...
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
It's very sympathetic towards them. It's quite weird that it's so removed. Like, all the other ones have been... Like, Archie comic is told from Archie's perspective. Jughead is told from Jughead's perspective. This is narrated by a dog. And, yeah, it's a very 50-year-old male version of what being a teenage girl is like.
There were 25 different variant covers for this issue. Which one did you pick? Did you take a few of them home, or...?
Oh, man, there were so many that I wanted. I really loved...
Francesca Francavilla's one.
I loved the Bilquis Everly? Evely, uh-huh. Who I've never heard of before.
Of them at the beach with the hundreds of surf words.
Yeah, I really liked that one. I liked the Erica Henderson one, obviously, who I absolutely love. Robert Hack one.
Yeah.
That was really cool.
We're checking out. Let us know if you've picked up multiple variants on this one, because there were some really good ones for sure.
And in the back, they obviously put in a classic Dan DiCarlo Archie, which I feel like is just mean. Don't do that. Don't do that to someone else. Like, Dan DiCarlo is... the greatest. And in the back, there's like such an awesome example of why his pinups were so good and so fun.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
But I'll still read the arc. I mean, it's so good to look at. And
well, when it finishes in 3 years, you can let us know how it was overall. That's it for First Things First. All of this week's first issues reviewed for you. Let us know which ones you're going to pick up by emailing us at seriousissues@kingscomics.com, or shoot us a message or a comment over at our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/seriousissuespodcast. On to the rest of the show. We got a whole bunch of DC, a whole bunch of Marvel, a whole bunch of Image, and a whole bunch of independent stuff to talk about. Let's start off by, it's still relatively new, so we can do a little rebirth recap, starting with the good, and then onto the comics that I may drop extremely soon. The very good. I'm loving Tom King's Batman.
Loving it.
We got issue number 3. I'm also loving the art by David Finch on this.
Which I just never thought I would say.
It's classic. It feels just classic.
It just feels good.
In this, it's revealed that the two... superheroes that have come to Batman's aid, Gotham and Gotham Girl, are the children of parents who had a similar encounter in Crime Alley that Thomas and Martha Wayne did. Only they didn't die; they were saved by Batman, and in doing so, the young boy, their son, was inspired to become a superhero. He was inspired by Batman and wanted to be good like him. And I loved that.
Yeah, I thought that was really nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's this is kind of the kind of stuff that, you know, it kind of, it writes itself, but I could just read so many, you know, takes on that.
Yeah,
on
like, that. I mean, that opening scene, I was a little bit like, we've definitely seen Batman saving you know, a child from a similar situation to what he was in before. But Tom King manages to tell it so brilliantly. Like, I mean, the things that he says about, I mean, he really makes you feel Gotham when he says, like, oh, it smells like piss and smoke. You know, I get that. I get what that's, you know, I understand what that smells like. And also, I think one of the most fun things was how we learn about their origin story is by Batman back in character as Matches Malone.
Oh my god.
going to, like...
You know a comic is going to be good.
When Matches Malone shows up. It's one of my favorite things.
It was a great issue of the more recent, one of the final issues of Batman. I remember it was like the third issue of the Batman Inc. in the New 52 that Grant Morrison did with Chris Burnham. And the front cover was Matches Malone. And I was like, yes!
So fun, such a fun character. And I love it. I love the idea of Bruce Wayne putting on like a little moustache and getting into character. And it's the best.
It's an awesome arc that I can't remember if it's Rucker or Brubaker. It may have actually been Paul Dini. But he kills off Matches Malone.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
So good. No. He brings it back.
Right, yeah.
It's the best.
So good.
Oh, no, it's about the original identity of Matches Malone.
Right. Oh, yeah.
That's an amazing story. Matches Malone stories. Let us know which ones you like. I like all of them. We don't need to blow smoke up Tom King's butt again this week. Although we could just make it a segment.
Yeah. How are we blowing smoke up Tom King's butt this week?
It's the Batman comic I want to read.
Absolutely.
And I'm so happy for it to be existing. It goes without saying the inks by Danny Mickey and especially the colors by Jordi Belair.
Who just won the Eisner, obviously. Yep. Very deserved.
We said that she should win it and she did. Also, final page reveal is a DC villain that I was very happy to see.
I know, same.
Psycho Pirate.
So fun. Such a fun
villain. What's Tom King going to do with him? It's great. And it's the first time I've ever seen Hugo Strange and Psycho Pirate team up.
Yeah.
A team up that I did not know I wanted, but I'm very glad that it exists.
And that is a sinister, big, smiley Hugo Strange.
Plus, we have that tease from the Joker from last issue. So there's a lot of threads going on in this series. And I'm just desperate. I'm so happy that it comes up almost every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But I could live with this being weekly.
Yeah, absolutely. Agreed. It's so good.
I feel like there's almost it feels less impact it coming out of DC comic coming out this often because it kind of comes on the back of that, those Batman and Robin series.
Mm-hmm.
Batman Eternal and Batman and Robin Eternal, which came out every week. This feels similar to that because it comes out so frequently. Batman doesn't lose. I don't know. It just feels like, oh, we're not worthy of getting it this often.
Yeah.
It must be inferior in some way.
I hope they manage to maintain the standard.
Well, they haven't. I mean, Batman.
Well,
so
Batman,
far.
I mean, sure, because I feel like on Superman, they did not manage that. To be honest.
Okay.
Only because.
We're talking about Superman number 3 right now by, Pete Tomasi writing it with Patrick Gleason. They worked on the writing and layouts together and then drawn by Phil Jimenez.
Which is why I think I felt the loss.
Wait, it's not Phil Jimenez. It's not Phil. It's actually a different Jimenez. God damn it. Show me this. Show me the artist writing here.
George Jimenez.
And he's the guy who's going to be writing the Super Sons title when it starts with the team up between John...
John Kent and
Damian Wayne. Tell me what you didn't love about it.
The main reason was I felt the loss of Patrick Gleason's art. Definitely. Very strongly.
I thought it's still strong. Very strong art, but yeah, you're right. Gleason is so excellent in his character designs and
his
explosions. Sort
of dynamic.
Yeah, definitely. There was definitely some impressive stuff on here, but I think just it feeling different is all it takes for this to feel like a lesser comic.
And there's been a lot of animal killing in this book.
Yes, I thought that too.
Which was odd.
Did Crypto die in this?
I don't know. I hope he's not dead. He got eaten by the Eradicator.
I think that means that the Eradicator is going to kind of, I don't know. But this leads to John Kent becoming... a little Superman with a vengeance.
Mm.
I'm really enjoying this story. So the difference in art didn't annoy me too much.
I think I still enjoyed it. Just not as much, I guess.
Okay.
And I didn't like the Crypto being eradicated and you know, John picking up his like Crypto's cape. And I'm assuming he's going to start using Crypto's cape. That seems weird to me.
Oh, see, I love that. That's cute.
Yeah.
And I also, like, I'm all for someone being influenced by the death of a pet instead of a death of a fucking girlfriend.
Well, yeah, that is better. Take crypto out of the refrigerator.
Yeah, I'm still on board. I still really, I think DC, Batman is really great and Superman is great. And I feel like that's a good foundation. Unfortunately, it does not carry through to their other titles. Mm. We got the third issues of Aquaman, Green Arrow, and Green Lanterns. Did you read all three of those?
I sure did.
Put them from best to worst.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, God, I actually don't know.
Yeah.
Probably, I actually don't know. I disliked them all.
Yep, I'm in the same boat.
Aquaman is like a boring political nothing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care about Black Manta. I don't care about him. It just annoys me, like, him and Mira just, like, rocking up at the front of the White House and being like, we're here to see the president. Like, that's, yeah.
It just, yeah, Aquaman kind of feels really dumb in this book.
Yeah, he seems really, like, dumb and regal, and that's his entire personality, and that's all he has to offer. He's just, like, a bit dry, which is funny for a man who lives in water.
We can talk about Green Arrow. Yeah, so are you on board now?
Yes, this, I am.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't our man Schmidt on art this time. It was someone else, but I really enjoyed it. Ferriera.
See, I didn't like this as much. It looked like it was colored in pencil.
I like pencils, man. pencils. I like Schmidt more, but I like this too.
But this this was an incredibly dense read, and I didn't understand a lot of it. And I feel like I know enough about Green Arrow that I should have been able to follow this issue.
And that's been my complaint of since the first issue that they just cram so much story into each issue. You don't really get excited about any of the twists and turns.
And I'm annoyed that they've given the Black Canary Green Arrow relationship so little time to sort of get started. Like, already she's supposed to be one of the most important people in his life.
Yeah,
like, that's very irritating to me. And the villain isn't compelling, and who cares if he's lost his money again, and like, whatever.
Yep.
Green Arrow should not want money.
That's true.
Just that's his deal, right?
Yeah, just, yeah, all he needs is his bow, his arrow, and his goatee.
Yeah
Finally, Green Lanterns. Have you seen? Look at the list of the creators on this.
I know. It's a bit
Look, I get it. It's coming out a lot. You have to work with as many people as you can to make that more regular schedule.
But
you have one writer, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 people doing art, colors, and lettering. I almost read the first 5 pages of this, including the first page, in which starts again with, "My name is Simon Baz, I'm a Green Lantern." Stop doing that every issue.
I know.
I don't care. I know. I already know. It's the third issue. I already know that. I would much rather that it just be a recap page. Don't try and incorporate the recap page in, like, the dialogue.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why recap pages exist.
They're still dealing with the same problems that they face. And those are annoying. Like their face has Green Lanterns, but Jessica Cruz can't form things with her ring, and Simon Baz is too headstrong, and it's such a boring matchup.
Yeah.
And then it's still like more compelling than the actual big bad, which is the Red Lanterns.
Mm.
I liked that he made one of them not a Red Lantern, but then it kind of became confusing as that progressed.
But also, I wish that they would stop expanding the Green Lantern power set, because now Simon can turn Red Lanterns back to regular, and that's fine and everything, but why can't they just create constructs? Just let them create constructs and be space cops.
Exactly. Make one of them construct a green baseball bat, and the other one construct a green baseball glove.
Yeah.
It writes itself. And you just beat bad guys with the baseball glove and then catch them with the glove. You know what I'm trying to say here, guys. It writes itself.
We all get it.
Should we propose that we maybe drop all three of these?
I think I'm going to have to.
I cannot read another issue of Green Lanterns. And I feel really bad because I like Sam Humphries a lot.
I know. And I really want to like both of those characters. And I want to like the concept because I think it's solid. But it's just, it's not good.
I'm going to drop Green Lanterns.
Yep.
I'm going to drop Aquaman. I'm
definitely dropping Aquaman.
And I might stick Green Arrow out because I don't know why.
Even going to drop Green Arrow. That issue really annoyed me.
Yeah, definitely. One last DC comic was not a Rebirth issue. It was the 22nd and potentially the final issue of New Suicide Squad.
Oh,
a comic
that
I have not read any of, but for whatever reason, this piqued my interest. It's a kind of front cover of Harley Quinn as a baby, and then as a teenager, and then as Dr. Harleen Quinzel. and then as Harley Quinn, and wielding a big hammer, that which is the Joker's nose. This was an all Harley Quinn issue of her basically as Harley Quinn and as Harley and Quinzel trying to get in her own head and try and figure out what's wrong with her.
Oh.
It was written by Sean Ryan and drawn by Ronan Cliquette. And the art is amazing. I'm going to show you a middle panel right now of Harley Quinn riding a roller coaster, which looks like the Joker's mouth.
Amazing.
And then as she continues on it, it becomes purple and white and blue. It's just such an incredible visual style. It's not really a really important story to read. It's very lots of, you know, fun little tricks and writing things that kind of you delve into Harley Quinn dressing as Harley Quinn when she's a girl and getting in trouble from her mum, who looks surprisingly like Harleen Quinzel. So she's almost interrogating herself as her mum interrogates her in the past. Then you have like iterations of all of the Suicide Squad as dolls fighting certain things. Amanda Waller is like a nutcracker. I just thought this was a really, really fun issue and definitely a one-shot. You don't have to have read any of this current Suicide Squad run or plan to read any more from this to enjoy this comic. So, I think if you're a fan of Harley Quinn, but not the overly wacky, you know, DC's Deadpool take on Harley Quinn that's really popular at the moment, this was a really, really fun kind of tragic self-examination story.
Cool.
Yeah.
I will check that out.
You definitely should. Marvel.
Hey.
You guys think DC gets too many complaints about them? Just wait. You wait for Marvel. Should we talk about the...
They're complaining today.
The Civil War tie-in issues first or last? Because I'll be positive about almost all the ones that weren't.
Yeah, let's do the Civil War tie-ins first then.
So, we have three comics that came out this week that I read that were Civil War II tie-ins. They are three of my favorite Marvel comics ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
They are The Ultimates, All New Wolverine, and Patsy Walker, a.k.a. Hellcat. Three comics that I enjoy reading every time they come out.
Hmm.
All three of them tied into Civil War II in really, really boring ways. And the creative team, who were exceptional at their jobs, just fought as hard as they could to make this stupid event work within their ongoing story. And I want to give them props for doing so. But the trope of like, uh-oh, this fucking Ulysses guy saw you do some bad shit. Here comes S.H.I.E.L.D. You better do it. I don't know. Real boring stuff. You have the Ultimates kind of having a win for once after all the misery of Civil War II.
I thought that was fun. I liked the Ultimates issue. I liked that.
I liked all of these issues, but it was just like them succeeding in spite of Civil War II.
Yeah,
and you shouldn't have that prerequisite as you read a comic.
Yeah, it is. It is. I can imagine it's extremely difficult for writers to be told, oh, by the way, you have to tie into this for two issues and to interrupt what's going on in your story. I mean, I think that was really obvious in All New Wolverine.
So
because that, like, I mean, that's in the middle of such a fucking great run.
Yeah,
and absolutely. It's at like a really pivotal point, I feel, now that we've got sort of Old Man Logan interacting with Laura and Gabby and all the stuff that's going on there, and then to have to force in a couple of just a short little Civil War II tie-in, put in Ulysses. It's a bit, it wasn't the best issue of this run, let's say.
I did love the art on this, different from the regular.
Yeah.
What's his name? Ig Guara.
And I thought there was some cool moments between Laura and Old Man Logan.
Yeah, really, really
sweet.
You know,
like, she's very, but also, like, she's in control of that situation. You know, she is Wolverine. He is an old man.
Tom Taylor is so good at juggling all these things thrown at him. It was like, you know,
mm-hmm.
having to work with Old Man Logan instead of Wolverine, is tough and
very tough.
He adds to the story, in you know, because he's a really, really skilled writer. Agreed. Tom Taylor's doing great work with this job, in spite of everything. I thought the issue that suffered the most was the Hellcat run, Hellcat number 8. This deals with Hellcat realizing that her best friend Jennifer Waters, aka the She-Hulk, has been seemingly mortally injured in a critical condition after the initial events of Civil War II. And so you kind of have this like weird round table where they talk about her as a friend and what they're going to do without her. I just like imagine being Kate Leth and just being told, oh, you have to do this now.
Yeah.
Sorry, mate. She did well in spite of it. Like, it's the thing, I don't want, none of these were bad issues. And I think it's amazing that they weren't in spite of everything that was being given to them.
I think that this issue kind of exemplify a little bit for me why I don't 100% just love the Hellcat thing is that it's never very plot driven. I never feel like much happens in
comic. It's so fun and light.
Yeah.
The one great thing to come out of this issue was that Jubilee is going to be joining the cast of Hellcat
now.
Yeah,
that's the coolest.
Which means we get to see Brittany Williams take on Jubilee each week, and that is exciting to me.
And Brittany Williams is the best.
She's real good. All right, over to the non-Civil War tie-in, Civil War 2 tie-in issues. Our beloved Nighthawk, three issues in, written by David Walker. Did you notice something different about this issue?
Different artist.
Yep, but a good artist.
Yeah, still that. Good. Still similar. Looks like he's trying to do that style, which I appreciate.
Martin Morazzo on art here and doing pretty capable Villalobos artwork.
If anything, he makes it sexier.
Sure. This is just a real great comic book.
Yeah, it just continues to be excellent.
You should be reading Nighthawk.
That's, yeah, you really should be. If you like The Punisher, if you like crime comics, if you like interesting art, I absolutely...
If you like police corruption in your comic books.
I love it.
It's real good. This is a great issue, great series. Read this one alongside Power Man and Iron Fist, written by the same person, but two extremely different comics with similar themes throughout them, just told very differently.
Agreed.
Really enjoying it. All New Inhumans, number one, written by James Asmus, who I celebrated the work of last week on his Kong of Skull Island. Not so much his work. He wrote it, but I love the artist. I am struggling to... This is like the DC Rebirth comic of Marvel at the moment. I kind of just don't care.
I know. And it was annoying because I really did enjoy the beginning of this arc. I thought that was cool. Like, oh, this is cool. Yeah. Other Inhuman story and the Other Inhuman Society, but it's just kind of... Yeah. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just because everything else that I'm reading is so far from this story, but it just, yeah, I'm not that into it.
They just keep going to just a new weird place and you have to meet all these other new weird people who are bad or good, or maybe they're not bad. I don't know.
Yeah.
I like Kraven the Hunter's daughter.
Yeah,
in
that's
this.
Cool.
Anna Krivenoff is a good addition to the team. But I'm looking forward to this story arc to be resolved so we can hopefully move on to something a bit more meaty.
Agreed.
Finally, a comic that I'm sure you fucking loved. Black Widow number 5 by Mark Waid, Chris Samnee, and who's on colors?
Matthew Wilson. I absolutely did.
This is the most spy-ish spy comic I've ever read.
Agreed.
And we're about to talk about another great one when we talk about Velvet, but this is just, it's so fast-paced, and you finish each issue and you're like, I'm not sure exactly what I love so much about this comic.
Yeah.
I just know I loved it and I can't wait for the next one to come out.
It is just a straight spy comic and it's so it really does move. Everything's happening all the time and you don't know what Natasha's thought process is. You don't even know which side she's on, and so it's constantly like exciting constantly.
Totally.
I have no idea what's going to happen in every single issue, and every single issue does something completely different. And Chris Samnee is just doing like unbelievable work.
He's this absolute star.
He really is.
And I feel like, yeah, I mean, Wade, I want to, like, in my head, it's almost like Mark Wade is like the editor of this book.
Totally.
It's just like, yeah, you should draw that now. Do that. Yeah, yeah, you should definitely
do
that.
I like that idea. That's good.
Yeah, the storytelling, because it's hard to tell really fast paced action sometimes, and somebody just does it so seemingly effortlessly.
And it's a book with real consequences, you know? Like, you really feel everything, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, a big part of Black Widow as a character is that she did some fucked up things long, long ago, and we never find out what they are. And it looks like we're about to find out what they are.
Or at least one of them.
Because Tony Stark is the first person to find out something fucked up that Black Widow did. And next month begins the arc of fucked up things that Black Widow did.
I hope we get to see Tony Stark cry.
He's been crying. Or you want him to have like the big anime tears?
Yeah.
Like he's been having in Civil War 2? Sure.
Exactly what I want.
Over in the two Star Wars titles that came out last week. Star Wars, the main series, written by Jason Aaron and art by George Molina.
Such a good cover.
Such a good issue.
Yeah, this great issue. Like,
I mean, I know people have issues with stormtroopers kind of having personalities beyond, like, walking in formation and dying. This felt like a really, like, fun 90s action comic.
Mm.
But all the characters are stormtroopers. It's like a badass group of stormtroopers.
Totally.
And they all, like, they're like the SCAR unit or something like that. And there were no... There's no Luke Skywalker in this. There's no Darth Vader. There's no main characters. It's just like a bunch of really cool really cool stormtroopers, and you find out why they became stormtroopers,
mm-hmm.
and you know what they're fighting for. And I've never really read anything or watched anything that really did that. Like
me neither. I was sort of like, was that an unwritten like rule of things you don't do about Star Wars until The Force Awakens and we got Finn? Because I'm super into it.
Give me a cartoon series about just arsehole stormtroopers just going about their job. Killing everyone in their way.
They love it.
This could be my favorite Star Wars comic that I've read since Marvel started doing Star Wars comics.
It's definitely a good one.
It just felt like a story that no one's done before and something that they can definitely do something cool and new with.
Yeah, absolutely.
I bet you the next issue has just got all the main characters in it going, fuck these stormtroopers. finally, we had a bit of an advancement in the Darth Vader series. I don't know.
Yeah, fine.
It was fine.
I don't care anymore, to be honest.
Okay. It was cool to see a lot of threads get tied from earlier in the series, and I did like the panel of Darth Vader using his Force magic to deflect all the laser beams being shot at him.
Oh yeah, that is cool.
That was good fun.
That was good. One Marvel comic which I just wanted to mention quickly, which I did read that you didn't read, Scarlet Witch. Main reason I want to bring it up is because of the art by Tula Lote, who is going to be working
on this.
Yeah, like this book is really, if you want just like every issue to be an example of some of the best people working in Western comics, definitely pick up Scarlet Witch, because it's just the most amazing array of artists doing really interesting, really different stuff. And this was a really fun issue. Like, I mean, look at how she draws She-Hulk. I would love a Tula Lote She-Hulk.
To see a picture of She-Hulk where she's more red than green.
Yeah.
All the blood.
So cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Really good fun series.
I really need to read this series as well as all the other ones. Maybe I'll swap all new Inhumans for it.
Yeah.
Let's move over to Image. We had a couple of Image books. We already talked about Snot Girl and the other one that we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're going to talk about a couple more. Let's start with Velvet, written by Ed Brubaker, art by Steve Epting, and lettering by colors by Elizabeth Breitweiser.
Mm.
This is an ongoing spy comic that has been quite sporadic in its release schedule in the last year or so. Everyone thought she was an older secretary working for a British spy agency, but it turns out she was the greatest spy of all.
She's the best spy.
This kind of wraps up the first arc. You know, whether or not we see more Velvet stories after this is...
Well, I think the most exciting thing is that if you read
the letter
at the end...
Yeah, from Ed Brubaker.
Brubaker says, I have so many more Velvet Templeton stories to tell. And he goes like, for example, what was she doing in the 80s? You're like, cool, yeah. I don't want to know what she was doing in the 80s. So I really hope that we get to see more.
Yes.
I assume it'll be a while until we see any more.
Definitely. But it wraps up to a point where, like, if we didn't get any, like, this is still a good end of the story.
Agreed.
This is now is your chance. You can finally read this all in one in one hit, which I think would be a lot more fun than waiting months and months for it and forgetting who all the male characters are.
That's true. I will be rereading that.
Yeah,
definitely.
I can't wait to do that. I also cannot wait for Kill or Be Killed, Ed Brubaker's next book with Sean Phillips.
It looks so good.
We got an extended preview at the back of this, and it's really great.
Mm.
This actually a whole issue is a bigger than issue, bigger than regular issue too.
Yeah,
highly worth your money.
Absolutely.
The latest issue of Lazarus is I think now I'm going to start telling you, Siobhan, that you should catch up on this book.
All right,
it's got really really good. Greg Rucker and Michael Lark in this. I don't know if you remember, but in the first issue of Lazarus, this series kind of deals with families in the future controlling much of the world. And each of these families has a Lazarus, which is a genetically modified human who is their protector. They're, they're muscular, seemingly never like able to die protector. And the Lazarus for the main family in this book is Forever Carlyle, and in the first issue she got a letter saying don't trust the people that they are not your family, from someone that just called themselves Six.
Cool.
And you never really find out who that is, but in this issue we are introduced to a younger clone of Forever that they're training, and her name is Eight, which means that the Forever Carlyle that we were seeing in this book at the moment is Seven.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been getting letters from the seemingly AWOL Six.
Cool.
Pretty interesting. Numbering people. really, really great, great habit that I'd like to one day get into. You should be reading Lazarus. It's really great.
Is your child just going to be two?
Yeah, perfect. We are thinking of a literary name for our daughter. And the daughter could be born 2 weeks from now, everybody. Pretty exciting stuff.
So exciting.
Black Road, number 4.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the best issue of this series so far.
Oh, yeah? I'm sort of a little bit like...
Brian Wood and Steve Wands. This one is a Viking comic. And in it, we see a little bit of backstories of our two main characters. You didn't enjoy this?
I did, but it just wasn't top of my pile. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the immediate comparison is Northlanders, which mm-hmm. Brian Wood wrote for Vertigo. Lots of Vertigo references in this episode. Considering we're not reviewing one Vertigo comic this week.
Hashtag make Vertigo great again.
It's pretty good at the moment. Hashtag admit the Vertigo is great again. Black Road, the immediate comparison point is Northlanders, but that was so massive in scope, whereas this feels quite small in scope, and I think is a easier to follow comic because of that, but it is quite slow in its advancement of the main plot.
Maybe that's why I'm not that into it.
Finally, I read the most recent issue of Rumble by John Arcudi and James Harran, colors by David Stewart. AKA the Dark Horse comic that's for some reason over at Image. The art in this is fantastic by James Harran. You should be getting this because of the fantastic variant by our favorite artist working in comics right now. One of them anyway, top three.
Yeah.
Tradmore.
Amazing.
Please announce a comic that he's going to be doing really, really soon because he's the best. But this issue gave a lot of incredible action-packed backstory into the main demon of this series, and almost could be read as a standalone because it's a lot of fun. If you want a little taste of this series to see if you want to keep reading it, this is a good one.
Mm. I also I picked up She-Wolf issue 2 by Richard Tomasso.
I still haven't read number 1 of this.
Oh man, I am so enjoying this series. So in this issue, our She-Wolf heroine is introduced to a vampire who's gonna help her out, and there's some cool weird mystical dreams, and then there's a really cool fight when they both transform in the middle of the shopping mall.
Man, this looks like a fan of graphics book.
It's so good, man. I had a weird cut. Like, someone was like, oh, I was really interested in that book until I saw the art, and then I was like, oh no. I the art is like the main draw for this book for me.
Definitely.
I think it's so cool. Fuck so
writing.
Cool and
words
weird.
Words are stupid.
Words are dumb. I hate them. Anyway, it's really amazing.
Cool.
I highly recommend it.
Did you read The New Island as well?
I did. That had a... the first story is actually a new issue of Zootopia, which is like a classic Australian comic.
Right.
Has
something
to
do with a Disney movie?
Is that what it's called? I may be... Zooniverse. Sorry. There you go.
You found it quite hard to read.
Yeah, I was a little bit confused by that.
Very dialogue heavy.
Yeah, but the other stories in Ireland were really excellent. I love Ireland. It's probably the best anthology comic out.
Better than the sex issue that Grant Morrison did of Thing on last week?
Oh, I don't know. This is a pretty sexy issue. I mean, if anyone knows anything about Brandon Graham, you know he's a weird, sexy guy. but there's a really cool, weird story in the back about a scary garbage disposal shoot.
Right.
It's really good.
Amazing.
I loved it.
I'm scared of the bigger format of this book. I think that makes me weird. Not the
series.
Yeah,
it's slightly larger than a regular issue, which is, it is odd.
It's a magazine format.
Mm.
Over to Boom. We've got a few more comics to get through. We'll fly through them, guys.
Mm.
Let's talk about the comic I liked the most, actually. IDW, Tales from the Dark Side.
Really good fun.
The second issue by Joe Hill and Gabriel Rodriguez. This told another, Twilight Zone-esque kind of story about a guy who... Similar to that Image comic we talked about at the beginning of the episode, he sees demons, and him going for an operation in which they're going to remove the demons from his brain, possibly for that company's benefit more so than the guy that has the demons. This basically just sets up the story, and then it looks like part 2, which we get next month, is going to end it. But I mean, the art's fantastic, and the story is nice and creepy.
Yeah, ultimate Twilight Zone style stuff, if that's what you like.
And this is going to make for an incredible trade when it all gets put together.
Yeah,
even
absolutely.
Though it's not an ongoing, ongoing story. It's real fun.
But it is also cool. Like, I love that you could pick up that issue on its own.
Definitely. The Joiners, number 2 mm-hmm. or 4, over at Arkea.
Mm-hmm.
Are you enjoying this series?
Yeah, I am. I sort of, I don't know, it makes me feel weird.
Yeah,
I wish that the panels were sized to fit the page. I don't understand.
I wonder if this was written as a digital comic before.
Yeah, or like a web comic or something.
Yeah, created by RJ Ryan and David Marquez. This is a book about science and creation,
family.
And family and I don't know, adultery. Yeah. Oh, at the back it says family, narcissism, and science.
That's pretty much it, right?
Yeah, and I don't mean like yeah, like again, it's like you know that similar thing with Snot Girl. Like the main character is kind of unlikable, but also like weirdly compelling and relatable.
Yeah, yeah, he makes me feel icky, but I still want to read what he's talking about.
Yeah, this is just a very unique book coming out right now. It's only a 4-part, and definitely something that is worthy of your time.
I think. I'm going to read the 4 issues.
Yeah, definitely. Archer and Armstrong. One book I did not read this week was Faith Number One.
I missed a copy.
Valiant.
Completely.
I picked it up, so I might talk about it next week. But Faith pops up in The Adventures of Archer and Armstrong this week, which is a one-shot with art by Mark Norton, written by Raphael Roberts. And it was the first Valiant book that I've read since we started this podcast that made me realize that, oh, there's heaps going on in the Valiant universe that I don't have no idea about, because this ties into heaps of stuff that happened in the Harbinger series.
Mm-hmm.
It was still really, really fun and goofy. You've complained about Faith being a bit too pop culture referencey and fangirly. I totally got that from this. She dates Archer of Archer and Armstrong.
Mm-hmm.
And this is about them having a date in LA. But they're constantly talking about, you know, Faith gives Archer a bunch of movies to read, movies to watch, and they're talking about Back to the Future, and
it's
just like a bit on the nose. You know? I hate it when you watch a movie and they start talking about bands they like and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I got
unless that is like the
this.
Focus of the movie or something.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
Yeah, it's just if
get these dang movies out of my superhero books. over at Boom, we had Lucas Stand, issue 2 of 6. Yeah, let's just drop it. I don't know.
Yeah. I didn't even finish it, I don't think. I got a bit way through and I was like, what is this even about? For Christ's sakes, it's so confusing.
There are like, I mean, when you get a stack of 30 to 40 comics, do you order them in or do you just kind of take them as like pick up that book as it comes to you?
It depends, because a lot of the time I like to leave the ones that I'm most excited about until the end, because otherwise I'll just let all of the other
I'm the opposite. This was at the very bottom of my pile,
yeah,
alongside a few comics that I did not get around to reading this week. Not because I don't like them, just because I knew I would have to reference other issues that came before them. I think I completely forgot to pick up Joyride number 3, so Joyride number 4 was not read by me this week.
Nice.
Lucas Stand was pretty low at the bottom of my list and just a bit of a slog to get through.
Yeah.
There are some slightly interesting things happening in here. It's about a guy who gets sent back in time to help, but the guy who sends him back in time is a demon and he has to deal with that.
But it's very confusing. Like, even that is... I feel like you have to read really close to even understand that.
It's just also gritty for the sake of being gritty.
Yeah, totally.
That's the easiest way to get me bored.
And then there's Nazis and then there's whatever. Dumb.
Finally, a book that I really did like was Weird Detective number 2, written by Fred Van Lente over at Dark Horse, art by Gio Villanova.
Perfect.
Nailed it. We really enjoyed the first issue. This took us by surprise, and the second issue just continues to give us more of what that first issue had going for it, but adding a whole bunch more crazy alien bullshit.
I love it. I love all of... Because they keep adding to the various senses that he has, because humans only have 5 senses or whatever, and he has a million. And I really like, the one in this where he licks someone's brain and it's like tasting the brain sense or whatever.
And so
he funny.
He then knows what that person has done that day.
And amazing, like such like really, really great art, really, really funny. I liked it a lot.
And there's a pin up at the back which is drawn by Raphael Roberts, who writes Archer and Armstrong. So I didn't know that guy also did art. Cool stuff.
Nice.
Oh, boy.
Holy moly.
What a week.
I actually even read more than that. 2 things which I wanted to mention really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Number one is the final volume of Naoki Urasawa's Monster. Mm-hmm. This is something that's reprinted. Viz are doing really nice oversized editions of his work. This wraps up... this was the final volume of his incredibly long-running, incredibly compelling and constantly terrifying sort of... psychological thriller about a doctor who saves the life of a young boy who then turns out to be a serial killer and is a monster and is the monster of the book. And it's amazing.
Wow.
And it goes on for so long.
How many
and it's so brilliant.
Are? 9 volumes.
So you can now pick that up with the full knowledge that you can then read that whole thing. And I love it. And I also read one thing which I wanted to mention just because we had a fan or a listener, sorry, listener, Callum, write in and ask for those stories, comics that make us laugh out loud. I've just started reading Graham Morrison's Doom Patrol.
Oh, cool.
Which is why I'm in such a Graham Morrison mindset.
Right. He's a pretty easy person to take over your entire brain for long
periods
of time. He
really is, and he really has. And Doom Patrol, I hadn't read it before, and holy moly, it really does make me laugh out loud. Like, it's such an amazing book, and I really can't say it enough.
So which are you reading in trade?
Yeah, yeah. Vertigo have done these really nice, big, oversized trades, which are like sort of two trades stuck into one, I think.
Cool.
And so it's a nice way to get that. And the second volume of that just came out last week. Just some of the most inventive, bizarre superhero comics. It really makes me feel, reminds me of Jack Kirby's Fourth World, just for sheer inventiveness. And there are just moments where, like, I mean, in the first story arc, Robot Man and Crazy Jane are fighting against someone who Grant Morrison, in the space of two panels, implies is an alien, also God, and Jack the Ripper. And I just, like, that just made me giggle.
They're your three favorite people in the world.
It just made me giggle. I was like, you're so silly, Grant Morrison. That's such a funny idea. Why'd you come up with that? So, highly, highly recommend it.
Yeah, I've got the entire run on my iPad, but I've only read, like, maybe the first 8 issues or something.
You got to read it.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I tried reading The Filth that he put out through Vertigo a few, maybe 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
I only got a couple issues in, but I should finish it. He's written a shit ton of comics.
He's just written so many comics.
A cosmic shit ton. it's very hard catching up on old runs that I know I should read when we have to read. We're at King's Comics. Jim in particular holds a gun to our head and says, you have to read 40 comics this week or you're dead.
Yeah, yeah. He will kill us. He will kill us. He's a bad man.
We'll do it for Jim. There's lots of comics coming out this week. We're recording this on Wednesday afternoon, so we've already got them in our hot little hands.
I'm so excited.
From DC, you've got the Rebirth issues of, what have you got? What's it called? The Red Hood and the Outlaws, plus the number one issues from Hal Jordan and the Red Lantern Corps. Green Lantern Corps? God, fucking Red Green Lantern's on my mind. And Nightwing, etc.
Batgirl, also the first issue of Hope Larson's Batgirl, which I'm super excited about.
Okay, that's an actual one you should pick up.
Yeah.
Forget the others.
And Nightwing. No, you should pick up Nightwing too.
Yeah,
and the third issue of Wonder Woman.
Hell yes, that's right. Yeah, we go back. Although I just want the Nicola Scott one.
I know, but nah, you forget how much you like Liam Sharp.
That's true. All right. Over at Marvel, if you have to, like we do, you should get Civil War number 2, number 4.
No one's forcing you.
Word is, it's not great. Who saw that coming? And I also highly recommend a new comic coming out through Aftershock called Captain Kidd, written by Mark Waid, whose name we've already said 10 times this episode. We also get Jupiter's Legacy number 2, issue 2. And just because you should pick it up, Predator versus Judge Dredd versus Aliens.
Hell yeah.
Over at IDW and Dark Horse, the club.
Also, the first trade of The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina is out this week.
So if
you've heard our massive recommendations for that, it's a good time to pick it up. There's also some exciting manga out this week.
Exciting manga.
Which I know everyone else cares about a lot.
Unlike that boring manga that came out before now.
There's one called, I don't even know how to say it, Lizzelotti and the Witch's Forest, which the only reason I'm very excited about is because it's by the creator of Fruits Basket.
Cool.
There you go.
Rom Space Knight gets his own number one.
Finally.
If you enjoyed that Free Comic Book Day issue that came out earlier in the year. I think I maybe did. Maybe not. I don't remember.
I can't remember.
And finally, best cover of the week definitely goes to The Unbeatable Squirrel
Girl.
Oh, my God.
I hadn't even seen that.
Which features Mole Man in a fedora, tipping his hat and saying, M'lady.
The internet has taken over comics.
I'm all for it, though. That's great.
Yeah, nice.
It's Mole Man, the new suitor of The Unbeatable Squirrel Girl. It's such a good comic.
It's so
Ryan
good.
North is doing great stuff.
And
Eric Anderson, too. That's Serious Issues for this week. My name is Levins. Her name is Siobhan.
Hey.
And make sure you blow your nose, get all that snot off your nose this week. You can find us online, facebook.com/seriousissuespodcast, or send us an email because we'd love hearing from you, seriousissues@kingscomics.com. If you want to check out some other podcasts I run, I do one called Hey Fam, which you can find on iTunes, and another one about food called The Mitchin. Siobhan can be found every month at the Queens of Kings events.
Just had one over the weekend. We just had one on Sunday and it was so much fun. Thank you to anyone listening who came along. I just have the most fun just talking to a bunch of geeky ladies about nonsense for 2 hours.
Did you announce what the next book is for next month?
Yep, Bitch Planet. I know I announced that last time, but I was wrong and it was Ms. Marvel, and this time it is going to be Bitch Planet.
Excellent. And finally, we are going to be releasing a bonus episode in the next week all about the King's Comics Zine Fair.
Woo!
Tell me about that Zine Fair, Siobhan.
It's happening August 6th. We will have a bunch of really cool local creators in store from 11 till 3 p.m. But even maybe even more excitingly is we're going to have a sale. There is going to be a King's Very Rare sale on all indie comics, which just means anything that isn't Marvel, DC, Image, or Dark Horse. So there's going to be a bunch of manga on sale. All the Valiant stuff is going to be on sale.
Boring manga or exciting manga?
Only exciting manga. Only the exciting manga is going to be on sale. And yeah, it should be good fun. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Awesome. And we're going to be talking to a few creators of those zines and people that enjoy them on our bonus episode, which should be out sometime next week.
Nice.
So yeah, until next time, we'll see you for another episode of Serious Issues.
Thanks, guys.
Stay serious. Should we end the episode with that? That's good.
Yes, that's okay. Good.
Great. Perfect. Bye.
Nailed it.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.